This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
Got some good responses to that text of "Does America do it right?" with the emphasis on parity. From the 206, our pro leagues are examples of parity. Our college sports are examples of the rich getting richer. That is very true. Like, yep. If you look at the way it's set up and the bias against non-Power 5 teams when it comes to the rankings, how money gets circulated within the system and how it stays within the biggest programs, that's absolutely true. And in that way, college football specifically is much more like what we see in Europe with how the soccer economy works. There's another person that texted in of, hey, if you let people spend whatever they want, the Yankees would win 40 championships because they could spend whatever, they just outspend everybody to it. It's interesting. That's not generally been the case. You definitely have a tier system between where haves and have nots, but even when the haves are fighting it out amongst each other, you can guarantee that you'll finish in the upper half of the league by spending a lot of money. Winning a championship is about more than just spending money usually.
Yeah, you kind of got to look at the sports too. I think with football, it's almost dangerous, right? It is dangerous if you don't have a bunch of talent on the team because guys get banged up. But I also think that even on the weaker teams, people see a team like the Jags and say, oh my God, they're horrible. They're this or that. I guarantee there's like 10 All-Americans on that team. Guarantee mm-hmm. there's a guy who was the offense or defense, the MVP of his section in high school. Like, these are still good ball players. You just don't have a lot of them. So there are a lot of layers when it comes to football. Because as I listen to these texts and I read, I start to think about the health of these guys. And I'm like, I have seen horrible football teams out there, at least in the amateur level. And I'm like, all right, we got to get these guys out. It's dangerous. Stop the game. But at the NFL level, I think it's a free-for-all, man. There's enough good football players in college football to suit 32 good football teams, at least decent football teams, no matter what you're spending, because there's always going to be a guy who gets overlooked, because a bunch of guys get overlooked, who will go to a team for cheap and go out there and ball. Do they have the chances that a team with a bunch of money will have? No, of course not. But every now and then, I think a team would emerge.
Also, they said that I think it's one of the reasons that people hate the Yankees, because they spend the most. Having a team everybody hates is not a bad thing for a league, right? Because they're extremely popular. Nobody has more fans than the Yankees. And they're extremely unpopular. No team is loathed more than the New York Yankees, except for maybe the Boston Red Sox. But all of those things about how it works, I find it fascinating to think about this. The one thing that I think American sports does wrong is we don't have relegation. I truly believe that relegation would be, and it would address one of the things that I think is becoming more of an issue, which is tanking, which is teams saying we're going to be deliberately bad for a couple of years and get all the draft picks and all the resources that we can, because you would not make that decision if there was the possibility that you were going to fall out of the first division. Like, if you could go from the NFL to the XFL,
yeah,
you would have a lot of teams that were like, I'm not taking the chance that we're going to finish last.
Mm-hmm.
If the Houston Texans last year, when they went into the toilet, had then, oh, sorry, you don't get the NFL TV money anymore. You go to the XFL. Like, you would see teams that would be, and that's what happens in European soccer, that in some ways, and this would be the one, like the Tampa Bay Rays don't have an incentive to actually shoot for titles. They run themselves extremely smart. They don't spend much money. But because they're in this sort of mediocre, you don't have the same incentives to either try to win or to avoid losing that you do in European soccer, where, like, man, you've got to be very conscious of not having the bottom fall out of your team.
I like the relegation. Send them to the XFL or the CFL. Send them to
or
Canada.
Or the SEC. The SEC.
I like it. Give them something to play for. And that's what one of the things I don't like about sports is tanking. I understand it from the business side, but when you're tanking, you are affecting people's lives, the guys on the team who are trying
yes.
to who are trying to make a living doing this. And now they're coming from a horrible situation. It's all bad. But I like that. I heard something about how the XFL and the CFL are looking to either combine or the champions play each other, you need that brother league, that D league, that development league, that relegation league. I think one, what it would do is it would help players develop and it would give guys to play for. I think we need to get a petition going, Danny. We need to talk to whoever we need to talk to and make relegation real in the NFL. I like that.
Yeah, from the 425, what is relegation? Well, in like the Premier League, for example, the bottom four teams, they get sent down to the next division. They go into what is called the Championship, which doesn't really make sense because it's the secondary league. The bottom four teams get sent to the little boy, like they get sent to the lesser league, and the TV money's not as much. There's huge financial repercussions for it, and the next year you're not playing in the big league. So if you were, hey, you're going to finish last this year if you're – who's terrible right now? Well, the Yankees are terrible right now. I don't think anybody thinks they're going to finish in last. But you could get relegated. And the top four teams from that lesser league get bumped up there. And somebody bringing up the Rays were a terrible example to bring in there. That's a whole different story about how the Rays used the financial system as a bad example on my part. The Mariners are in first place. They're playing the Dodgers a little bit later this afternoon. First pitch will be at 1:10 p.m. We saw how a team that's good, a good team wins a game like the Mariners did last night.
Yes.
With ways that you're not normally expecting. The Mariners have been carried by Mitch Haniger and Ty France and Kyle Seager to a lesser extent. They were not last night. They found other ways to win. They found a home run by Jose Marmolejos, a home run by Taylor Trammell, an RBI double. Great pitching out of the bullpen, especially from Kendall Graveman. They played great defense. Finding ways to win like that,
exactly.
Outside of, hey, our best players playing their best. Good teams are able to find ways to win when their best players aren't doing most of the work.
Boom. You said it right there. That's what the good teams do. That's what the great teams do consistently. All right, Mitch, you're having a bad day. I got you. All right, France, you're having a bad day. I got you. And then you're doing it on the defensive side as well. It's not about style points, right? You just want to grind it out and win games. Sometimes you're going to blow teams out. The pitch is going to be on point. The bats are going to be high. Defensively, you're going to be everywhere. And then some days you're going to go up against the defending champs, and it's going to come down to the ninth inning. You have to turn a double play and get a win. In every style and way that they have won so far this year, they've come back, they've been ahead, they fought guys off, they blew a couple teams out. All that's going to do is help these guys later in the season. It's about being in these situations and being familiar with it. And when you have such a young team, that's vital. These 160-some games are going to help these guys develop. So it might be stressful at times, but when you're stressed out, appreciate it when it's done, because these guys are learning to win and learning to play. And even when they lose some of these games, they're learning from their mistakes.
Learning from their mistakes, taking advantage of opportunities. Taylor Trammell is someone who has scuffled. That's one of the baseball terms through the first couple of weeks. He's had a couple of big moments, but he's someone who's striking out a ton. He's showing that it's a difficult adjustment to big league pitching. They say it's the hardest adjustment in sports to go from facing minor league pitching to facing the kind of pitching you see in big leagues. He had a big moment last night. Let's play his home run from early in the game when he piggybacked off what Jose Marmolejos had done.
Here's a swing and a drive deep into the gap in left center field, and this one is going and going, and goodbye baseball! Taylor Trammell with an opposite field home run out to the pen. His third home run of the season.
I'm getting excited when I see guys and the younger. He and Evan White are the two that I'm really rooting for, not just because of their importance to the team, but to feel that I think they're guys who could do with a boost of confidence. Like that we're waiting to see a jump in their production. I think they're better hitters than they've shown so far, but having a rough go of it. And for Trammell, it's him just getting used to the major leagues. I find myself feeling a little extra, like, sort of fist pump when Trammell does something, because I love his personality. And you feel like, hey, that's a guy that if he starts feeling like he belongs at this level and comfortable, it's going to make a huge difference for this team.
Yeah, and you need guys like that. You have your leaders, your consistent guys that you can count on. But cliche, right? You're only as good as your weakest link. I'm not saying he's their weakest link, But you need the guy in the middle of the order to get going. You need the guy in the back of the order. You need JP to get going at times. Everyone has their spots. Everyone's going to have their time to shine. Last night was Marmolejos and Taylor's time to get after it and shine. And not only did he hit a home run, then he comes up with a big base hit. Confidence. Building confidence. I'm seeing it grow in this young man.
Yeah, and he's going to be put into a spot. He's going to move to the spot in the outfield that he was getting prepared to play. He'll go to left field today. Kyle Lewis back in center field. I'm not sure what I expect from Lewis at the plate right off the bat. It's going to be he's going to have to get his timing back. But adding him back into the order is, people say, lengthen the lineup. It'll get people back in the spots that Seattle was that they were projected to be in. It should have a trickle down effect of maybe lessening some of the pressure that is on some of the other players, or specifically on someone like Taylor Trammell.
Yeah, I don't expect much from Kyle. It'd be nice for him to come out and go 2-for-3 and have a good day. But let's not forget, he's been sitting for a while. His knee's been banged up, and there's a process to this. A lot of guys can hit the ground running and act like they never left, but I don't expect that from him. But there has to be a morale boost as well. You're getting one of your best players back, one of your best defenders back, one of your best bats back. So it should boost this team up a bit. You got Marco on the mound tonight. It feels right. You know, yesterday I was nervous for these guys. I'm like, man, the big boards are coming into town. Let's see how they respond. And because they've responded, keeps me optimistic for today. And I can't deny, people light me up. I am a Dodger fan. I grew up a Dodger fan. But in this scenario, I'm all for the Mariners, because we know the Dodgers are going to be there at the end of the year. It's about the Mariners right now.
No, what's going on, Bump, is you're in the afterglow of the championship. And I'm familiar with this spot. Nothing can happen right now that is going to diminish or not. Like, you're still kind of crowing or feeling proud about the World Series last year.
Yeah,
they were 13-3 coming into this game. This is, they say the nickname of Kendall Graveman is Gravy, which we need something different. Gravy.
You're not feeling that?
No, I'm not. It seems like a terrible, terrible nickname. Like, gravy's not something that, gravy's like something you add at the end of the meal. It's extra.
It is. You add gravy into the meal. That's what Graveman does, right?
I don't know, man. Gravy to me seems like the finishing touch would be like the butane torch for baked Alaska. Like, that would be like what Graveman is. He's coming in with, he's spitting fire, not the fatty sort of lumpy, like ladled over the top of the meal. But you're in there's nothing that can happen. After your team wins a title, there's like this grace period of, you don't care what happens for the first 2 months of the next season, right? You're like, hey, we're going to talk to me in October, because we know we're going to be there, and that's when it matters.
Right? How obnoxious is that? Yeah, we'll be there in October.
Oh,
that's what
great.
All the Dodgers fans were saying at T-Mobile, for sure, guaranteed. We'll be there in October. Where are you guys going to be? You're right. I am still glowing a bit, but I got love for these M's too, man. I've been here way too long not to love these dudes.
And when they had a win like they did, and specifically the gloves, we'll play. I thought the biggest play in the game, I don't think there's much doubt about the biggest play in the game. Marmolejo's home run was awesome, but it was Dylan Moore's diving stop that preserved a one-run lead here in the top of the seventh. He was playing third base because Ty France had left after getting hit by a pitch, and here was Dylan Moore reacting in real time.
The pitch, swung on and hit. Oh, what a catch! A diving, leaping catch by Dylan Moore. Inning over. It was a line drive, stepped to his left, got airborne, made the play. That's the end of the top of the seventh inning.
Is that the toughest defensive play we saw yesterday? I think Evan White's was the hardest.
Yeah.
Because, man, he's running, looking over his shoulder. At one point, he had to just turn and run to a spot and then look back and pick up the ball again. But that Dylan Moore was just all reaction.
Yeah, I think the Dylan Moore play was the biggest play, because if he doesn't make that play, then they probably score a run or two. I think Evans was the hardest, because it's just like, it's almost like the Willie Mays catch. Like, whenever you try to catch anything over your shoulder and you're contorted all crazy and stuff, it makes it tough. So Dylan Moore's catch was the biggest, but Evan White's was the hardest.
Before we get to around the NFL, Spencer Hall, who on Twitter is one of my favorite people to follow with regard to college football, we were talking about the Super League. Spencer Hall has said, I'm going to start the anti-Super League of college football teams who do nothing but blow leads and cause chaos. It's going to be Pitt, Cal, both Arizona teams, and Auburn so far. It's going to be the anti-Super League. They're just going to be the nemesis. They're going to do everything wild and unpredictable, occasionally go on probation and get in trouble, and routinely fire their coaches. It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bumpus filling in for Paul Gallant. It's time for us to go around the NFL.
It's time to go around the NFL. The bottom line on the biggest stories in the NFL every morning at 9:15 with Danny and Gallant.
Today's an exceptional day.
Maura.
Hi, guys.
Is that the right kind of teams? Who else would be in the anti-Super League of college football teams? I feel like both of the Arizona teams and Cal fit right in there. Like, those are absolutely. Pitt is also a good selection. West Virginia probably also could get the call in there. Virginia Tech's a little too good. I love those college football teams that are like just good enough to be interesting, yeah, in either a negative or positive way. Like, they're just volatile. They're volatile programs.
Volatile programs. That should be the league. The volatile, the volatile conference.
Volatile America. Maura, what do you got happening in the NFL?
Well, we've covered this a little bit, but pretty big news with a warrant being issued for the arrest of new Seahawks defensive end Aldon Smith yesterday for an alleged second-degree battery that occurred in the New Orleans area on Saturday evening. Smith allegedly choked a victim unconscious during a confrontation that began inside a coffee shop.
That sounds personal.
Yeah,
right? Because it's his boy, right? Well, yeah. Someone he knows got under his skin to the point where he said, forget all this work that I put in to clear my name and show guys that I'm responsible, that I can play ball. I'm going to roll the dice and risk it all at 7:30 at a cafe and choke out somebody that I know. Again, we have to wait and see what happens. But Brock put out a good point. They don't just send arrest warrants out for nothing. There's right. Something there.
Yes. There are not many explanations that he could offer that would mitigate this to the point where you're like, okay, yeah, we'll still go ahead with your employment contract. It's not to say that they don't exist. And look, this is based on what the person who's identified as the victim told police happened, but apparently there's video as well. There's probably not a lot of explanations that would make you feel comfortable about continuing with that. We'll see how it plays out. I will say it was a good sign, but first reaction, first question you asked me, Michael, was what time did this happen? Yeah. And that was my first. That's the first thing I always look for, too, to make sure it's not in the early hours of. When it's in the early hours of, which means it's too late to say it was Monday night, yep, but you can't really call it Tuesday morning because it was like 2:30 a.m., you have a pretty good idea about the circumstances that it happened under. 7:30 p.m. outside a coffee shop is a strange time. So I'm not saying there isn't a suitable explanation, but there's probably not many that would make you feel with the Seahawks like, oh, okay, I understand what happened.
I don't feel good about the fact it's been almost 24 hours since this arrest warrant was issued and we haven't heard about him turning himself in. I feel like if this is all just a big mistake, you have your lawyer say something, you say, I'm going to cooperate with the police.
Very fair
Maybe
point,
Maura.
Maybe
that's coming. But
yeah.
I would say this, too. Alden, do not get the lawyer that Quentin Dunbar had. anybody but that dude. What was his name?
Do,
Greco?
Because the lawyer ended up just taking the fall for everything. He tried to pay people off.
You need a fall guy.
Oh, you need a fall guy.
The Steelers gave head coach Mike Tomlin a 3-year extension. He is entering his 15th year with the team and has never had a losing record. Only the third coach in Steelers history.
It's wild.
Yeah.
I like Tomlin a lot, and I think it's pretty remarkable what he's done and the stability that he's been able to provide. He was exceptionally young when he was hired, and he's become one of the veteran coaches in the league. And, man, if anything, guys don't tend to become better players or better teammates when they leave Pittsburgh. Antonio Brown shows that what a headache he could have been and wasn't, and a credit to Tomlin's management. You also don't see many guys blossoming elsewhere. He's a heck of a coach.
Good head coaches are like franchise quarterbacks. Like, once you find one, you do everything you can to hold on to it because the working relationship has to be right. Philosophy has to be on point. You got to be on the same page. Head coaches are hard to find. That's why every year there's, what, 5 to 10 jobs open. That's why there's always a carousel going on. Good for Tomlin. I would be highly disappointed if Pittsburgh got rid of him. Like you said, Maura, not one losing season in 15 years. That's tough to do.
Broncos players were among the first to release a statement last week saying they would not attend voluntary workouts, but it was apparently not a unanimous decision as quarterback Drew Lock and about 20 other teammates reportedly worked out at the facility yesterday.
This is going to be weird when people start reporting who's there working out. Like that's
snitching.
Yeah, it is. This is a tough question, I would think, as a player. You've got your self-interest in your career. Like, you should do what you think is best. But there's also kind of the pressure of teams are asking you for things and the players and demanding and basically forced a 17th game down your throat. You do owe something to the veterans who are trying to limit and put some limits on what teams ask for you. I guess what I hate is that most fans and reporters are going to end up being like, oh, let's see who's there. Where it's like, that's kind of that guy's personal decision a little bit.
Man, and let me remind people too, this is the NFL. This isn't college football, high school football, where the teams are just so close and all these guys love each other and everyone's friends and everyone likes each other. This is a business. This is the NFL, man. You know who the closest team in the NFL is right now? The Tampa Bay Buccaneers, because they won the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
After them is probably the Chiefs because they were in the game. After that, man, there's a lot of stuff that goes on in a locker room and within a team. So, yes, they are a team, but end of the day, this is a business, and you got to look out for yourself, because that veteran who's been in the game 10 years ain't going to be like, oh, man, we got to look out for Bump, man. That undrafted free agent, let's look out for him. They're like, nah, man, that dude's trying to take my job. All right, it's end of the day, it's a business. Yes, it sounds good, team, rah-rah, all that good stuff, but you're only close when you're winning. So those teams at the bottom, the guys are fighting for their lives right now.
The organized labor person in me, person who's been on strike, says, yeah, stick it to the bosses. Tell them that you're not going to do everything that they want you to do just because it's voluntary. But there's also the part of me of like, hey, if a person chooses to do that on their own time, if that's how an employee, like, that's totally there. I just don't like the guys being shamed for not doing the extra. Like, if you choose not to put the extra flair on your uniform, that's okay, too.
Yeah.
Man, I don't like bosses. I don't like bosses.
Don't get yourself in trouble, Danny.
Yeah, okay. Okay. What do we got, Maura?
The Bucs have re-signed backup quarterback Ryan Griffin, who I don't expect you to know, but you may remember him as the gentleman that whisked an inebriated Tom Brady past cameras following the Super Bowl parade. So Brady got his wingman or protector back.
Bump, what did you say? You need a fall guy?
Need a fall guy.
Griffin is the anti-fall guy. You need a fall guy who will take the fall if you do something dumb, and then if you're a little compromised, who will keep you from falling down.
I imagine
great instincts.
I imagine Tom Brady in a meeting like, what's that guy's name? Guy who helped me out. Guy who hold me up. What's his name? Yeah, we need him back. He got me out of there. We need, what's his name? Ryan? We need Ryan back.
And Ryan's like, in the scouting report. That's great intangibles. Knows to protect our money. Has his priorities straight. Knows his role.
Surprisingly, I can't say that I had heard of him before this, but apparently it's his 7th season as a backup quarterback.
That's longer than any Tampa Bay quarterback's ever been there. Isn't that wild? Like, they've been around for a long time. Like, he's been around for as long as the Seahawks have. That's the longest tenure that a quarterback's ever had.
Good for you, Ryan. Get that money.
It is Danny and Gallant. The Mariners getting set to take on the Dodgers. We got one familiar face returning for the first time, and one veteran we hope has found the secret to sustaining success. We'll explain next.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
A lot to be excited about today. It's fun seeing the Dodgers in town. Little too many Let's Go Dodgers chants last night for my taste, but Dodgers have their first celebrating coming off their first World Series in, what, 30 years?
more than 30 years.
32.
Feeling pretty good about the way things are. They've got a great squad, and the Mariners stood toe-to-toe with them for nine innings last night. They won an extremely well-played game. They won it with their defense. They won it with some unexpected pop from Jose Marmolejos and Taylor Trammell. And now you get the afternoon conclusion to the quick two-game set. Marco Gonzalez on the mound, and Kyle Lewis should be back in center field. I'm excited to see how this team will look.
Me too, man. Marco bounced back from two rough outings. You got Kyle Lewis coming back from a bum knee. That is my son's favorite player. I kind of forced that on him. He's going to have to take that and run with it. And another chance just to show that last night wasn't a fluke, right? And they don't necessarily have to win this game, but let's just keep showing progress. You can't come out here now and lose 10-0. You know what I mean? Like, you have to show that you are a competitive team. And I hope that's their mentality. You play to win every single game. You don't go out there just to have fun. And, you know, you're professionals. You want to win the game. But end of the day, you're using this as a measuring stick. Okay, where are we really? All right, we got our ace on the mound now. Kyle Lewis is back. We got a win last night. Let's go out and compete. Sweet. Win the series if you can, but worst case, go out and compete and build off of what you did last night.
That idea of, hey, competing, it sounds so simple and so basic. It's such a huge part of what it takes to be a successful baseball team, because every team has a couple stars. Pretty much every team has a couple of guys where, yeah, hey, if your best players play well today, you got a great shot at winning. What separates good teams is that you've got players that are capable of, when your best players don't play well, that you can find ways to win. You can find, and the Mariners did that last night. They did it with defense, and they did it with some unexpected pop from Jose Marmolejos and Taylor Trammell, two guys that had not been, in Trammell's case, really had not been providing that pop. Kyle Lewis coming back. The one thing that I'm thankful for about this Mariners start is that he's not coming back into a situation in which everybody's like, okay, finally, we survived not having Kyle Lewis. And now because that's a lot to ask for a guy to, when he's not played for a couple weeks, been recovering from an injury, to like, okay, we've survived. Now you've got to hit the ground running. Sales. Because, man, it's taken everything we have to hold on to this point. Like, you feel like, no, okay, the lineup should start lengthening, that there's not the same amount of pressure on him as there might be.
Yeah, if Kyle was expected to come out and be the hero and save the day, I mean, that's a pressure that I think he would embrace, because he's an athlete, he's a competitor. I think he likes that, but it's not ideal, especially for a team that is so young and has solo expectations, right? So I think this is a perfect situation for him to come back. You've already got the win against the Dodgers in game one. Just come out here and play a good game in game two. You got your ace on the mound. It worked out perfectly, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you do have kind of the advantage of the starting pitching a little bit. Sheffield looked good last night, and with Marco Gonzalez, you miss the Dodgers. I'm not going to diminish what Dustin May is, because when that guy's not one of your top starters throwing as hard as he throws and looking as good, that break that he has on his, I'm amazed that his curveball gets hit kind of like it does, because the movement it has, like that thing, and it breaks sharp. You feel good about the way that your rotation lined up against these guys. I also come into this game feeling not confidence for Marco, but I'm not on eggshells like I was his last start.
No.
I was really, and when he gave up a two-run homer after the way his first two starts went, and then giving up that two-run homer on a pitch that was up, I was definitely worried, like a feeling of like, okay, what's going on with Marco? I don't feel that way coming into this start, in large part because he settled down and he got mad after he gave up that home run. He retired 10 in a row. You feel like he's gotten back to where he's effective. He competed his way back into being someone that you don't have to be nervous about in this start.
He's in a good place. It's like when you go out, you play golf, you have high expectations. I've been playing some good golf, man. I'm going to go out and tear this course up. And you come out, you double, you bogey, another double. And now he's found a par three. He hit the green, two-putt par. He's nice and easy now. Now the swing's going to be nice and smooth. I think mentally and physically, Marco is in a great place. And I expect to see that today. I expect it. And we have to kind of see that today, right? We can't see him go back to how we started the season. You have to ride this way. And I think he knows he's the guy. He realizes the situation. You are playing against the Dodgers. Just come out and just have a good outing. Keep that competitive spirit. But don't play within yourself, right? Don't try to do too much. A lot of times when guys feel that pressure, they throw it a little bit harder. Their mechanics fall off a little bit. Just do what you've done your whole career, Marco.
I'm also beginning to sense, and maybe this goes back to what you had said about competing. If there was a trait that this Mariners team has showed so far this season, it is the way that they grind. It is the length of at bats. It's how hard guys work. It's that they really don't give away much. They haven't been a great defensive team so far, but they were great defensively yesterday, and I think they'll get better. They have been tough at bats, and they've made opposing pitchers work. They've struck out a lot, and I think this team is going to strike out a lot, mm-hmm. but they make guys work. And that sort of that effort and that competitive that they're not going to give much away when it comes even against facing the tough teams. And I don't know if that's going to be enough to get them a winning record this year, but it's going to make them interesting the entire season. And they certainly should have everybody's attention right now being 11-6.
That's what you want, right? At least that's what I wanted yes. coming into the season. Just be interesting. You know, like be exciting at times. Make some plays at times, and I think they've done it. They did that last year at times, honestly, with especially the play of Kyle Lewis. They were that. So just keep building off of that. That's all I want to see. My expectations are still low. I got some people hitting me up. Oh, the Mariners are going to the playoffs. I'm like, simmer down. It's April. It's nice to see them having success. But continue to be interesting. Continue to progress. And I need to see Kelenic, man. I'm waiting. Come on, Kelenic.
Yeah. Be interesting and improve. He homered yesterday.
Did he?
Yeah, he clobbered a baseball.
Come on, Jared.
Yeah. Be interesting and improve. Those are going to be the two ingredients to watch as we go through. It is Danny and Gallant. Michael Bump is filling in today. He will be back with us tomorrow before Paul Gallant returns. We're raising flags next, and that includes, I'm not sure if I've enjoyed watching someone eat it as much as I did last night in a baseball game. You'll hear that next.
From the pocket, and flags everywhere.
Flag on the play.
Now there's a flag down.
Every morning at 9:45 with Danny and Gallant. Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen.
If the noise persists, the defense will be charged with a timeout.
Flag on the play.
Lots to praise. Not as much to pan today, though we'll certainly try. It's time for us to offer up flags. Bump, why don't you go first here?
Flag. I'm going to raise a flag to every football player who decides to go to the voluntary workout. You Ooh. Do it. You make a great impression. You worry about yourself. Because as soon as they don't want you, they're going to cut you. These veterans love you until they don't. You have to worry about yourself during the offseason. Now, once you've made the team, once you're on the depth chart, you're on the roster, you're making plays, then it's about the team. Offseason, you be selfish. You do what's good for you in this situation. If I was there, I'm showing up early to these voluntary workouts. I'm texting Coach, hey, Coach, I'm here early, man. Let's chop it up real quick. What do you need from me? I'm trying to learn. So this is where you're selfish. I'm going to raise a flag for those guys who are going. Don't succumb to the pressure from these veterans. They're good to go. They got their money. You do you.
The 425 said this much more eloquently than I did when I was trying to summarize my feelings. I'm going to read his text or her text. It is voluntary, so they should not have to show up. But I don't like that vets are telling these young guys, do not go. It stunts a young guy's development into an elite player. I think that for...
Yeah.
I'm not going to think any less of a veteran who says, I'm not going because it's not in my contract. I'm going to look at them as they're not doing the extra flair, and that's fine.
Yep.
But the idea of, hey, you young guys shouldn't go either, reeks to me of some of the downsides of organized labor in which, hey, if a person wants to go and work on self-improvement and improve their ability to earn a living, it's just a bridge too far to think, no, don't do that. Like, if you tell them, like, hey, they'll take advantage of you, be careful. That's one thing. But saying, don't you show up, kind of seems like knuckle-dragger type behavior.
Don't tell them how to live my life.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you're sitting there with a guaranteed contract and a signing bonus and you're set. It's not going to cut Aaron Rodgers. Ryan Griffin, they might let go. That's why Ryan Griffin's making sure that Tom Brady doesn't tumble.
Ryan Griffin got three more years, Danny. He just bought himself three.
He knows how to protect the money, man. He knows how to protect the money. Maura, what do you have?
I'm constantly, you know, searching for any sound that we can use on the show, and I just found a cut that I love. I want to raise a flag for Kevin Garnett sharing this story. It was on the, I think it's All That Smoke podcast.
All the Smoke. Yeah. There's All the Smoke, right? That's Steven Jackson and Matt Barnes. And then there's an Isaiah Ryder one, too.
Okay, this is the Isaiah Ryder one.
Okay, I want to hear it.
They were discussing the time that Kevin Garnett tried to trash talk Jordan and immediately regretted it.
Hands on hips, legs locked, and they stared at me for about 15 seconds. I can't even really describe the next like 6 to 7 minutes of play, y'all. We down 25 now. It was just at 2. It got bad quick, y'all. I come to the joint, and they notice. When you come and you've been on the run, when you not got back on the floor, got back, had to rebound, had, and you feel like you on defense all the time, you come to the bench like this. So I was like, yeah, man, my bad, dog. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry. He's like, it's cool, man. I told you. Just shut your ass up, man. You're not fucking. So he, and Mike came down. Okay, young fella. Okay, damn, young fella. Damn, y'all done.
The story's awesome because Garnett was telling, basically talking to Isaiah Ryder with Michael Jordan right there. It was like, he can't guard you.
He can't guard you.
You're too strong for him. You're too big. And Jordan just kind of sat there and looked at him for a little bit.
You don't mess with 23. If there's anything we learned from The Last Dance, we knew it before The Last Dance was out. Now after watching that, I'm like, man, if I can have just an ounce of whatever's in his DNA just to my everyday life, goodness gracious, I'd be super successful.
And I took that personally.
I think yesterday was the year anniversary of that documentary debut.
Yep.
Could you go with all the different things he took personally? He took it personally when they signed Tony Kukoc. He took it personally when, who was it? He was compared to Clyde Drexler. He took it personally when George Karl didn't acknowledge him in a restaurant. Oh, yeah. It's those stories among NBA players have the best sort of those momentary interactions because it's such a tight circle of people. And the pecking order, and those guys are so, like, alpha male pecking order rankings and who you do and do not mess with is one of the more fascinating things. I am throwing a flag, or perhaps, yes, it's throwing a flag. You probably don't know the name Zach Hample, but Zach is someone who has made a fair amount of internet fame and actual real-world money for himself by becoming the world's most dogged pursuer of foul balls and home run balls in Major League stadiums.
Okay.
This clown, I shouldn't say, because he's a big fan. He loves baseball. He goes to all these stadiums. That's cool, right? Everybody should have hobbies.
Mm-hmm.
But he wears a hat of not a team, but of Major League Baseball because he's a fan of the game and identifies in that way. That's okay, I guess you can be a fan of baseball and you just love going to the games. Here's where it gets weird. He's caught or retrieved, he says, more than 11,000 balls over the course. He's gone to 60 Major League stadiums. 11,000.
Gosh.
Yeah, he says he's caught Alex Rodriguez's 3,000th hit, Mike Trout's first home run. He gives people lessons on YouTube. He's written books on the best ways to get people to throw you balls. He's crossed the line at different points. He got a ticket to the military-only game that was played at Fort Bragg a couple years ago and then got a lot of criticism for, hey, you're not a member of the military and you got into a game that was only for military members. Like, what's going on? He was pursuing a baseball yesterday, which Brandon Belt had hit into the outfield. It homered. against the Phillies, and he ate it. Like Zach Campbell. Here, listen, here's the play-by-play. This is the replay call of Belt's home run.
Look at that leg drive. Gets the hips through, and he'll let you know. Drops the bat. Does it again like he did in Miami. Goodness, watch this guy eat it. Whoop! See ya.
He's trying to hop over a seat in the front. He falls like where he's like fully on his side in the all of the spilled drink or whatever is on the bottom of the bleachers in Philadelphia. And he's reaching for the home run ball. He's like, ah! And he doesn't get it. And I just thought it was the best thing I saw all day. Because I was like, Zach Campbell did not get his 11,351st baseball from a baseball. No, instead some other kid who probably had never caught one before and will never do it again got that baseball. And I just thought that I thought nature is healing. I thought the world is recovering after 14 months of pandemic. The little glory hound, oh, I'm the best at catching balls, and at some point, don't you stop trying to get baseballs? Like, if you got 11,000 of them, isn't that enough?
What does he do for a living to where he's able to pursue his passion like this? I mean, it's not a bad gig, I guess. You get to go to a bunch of ball games and visit all the stadiums, but how are you paying your bills? That's my question.
I don't know. Rich parents? Right?
Sounds like it.
I'm gonna guess he didn't grow up a summer job doing hot tar roofing. I don't think he had it, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's an entirely self-made man, but yeah. So watching Zach Campbell eat it yesterday was thoroughly enjoyable for me. That's gonna do it for us. Wanna thank Tom Murphy for joining us, Brock Heward for Blue 42, the Professor John Clayton for our morning drive, Maura Dooley for rounding up all of the herding cats as she does each and every day on this program. And Michael Pompas, it is always really fun to work with you. I am looking forward to another day tomorrow. And you enjoy your Dodgers a little bit later today.
Hey, going to the game. What jersey am I wearing? You'll find out. Holler at me. But hey, Danny, appreciate it. Let's do it again tomorrow, huh?
We'll do it again tomorrow. Coming up next, Michael Pompas sitting in on the Paul Gallant Show. That's for the next hour.